I want to talk about education this morning because our kids are going back to school, and I think it's something that is, you know, different people have different thoughts, and oftentimes I think we make it into some sort of a moral issue, and so I want to just push back against that immediately and say that I really appreciated what Paul, even just in your prayer, we're praying for kids who are going back to school, whether that's back to home, you know, home, back, anyway, or whether they're going off to private school or public school. And when people, I run into people who, two camps. One is people who will simply ask, is there a right way to like educate my child? You know, is there one way that's better than the other? And that's a question that I think we should all wrestle with. I think it's a good question. And then sometimes I find people who become very dogmatic about their particular choice, whatever they've decided on and how that's better than all the rest. And what I would like to suggest is, and I don't think this is revolutionary, and if you're one of the dogmatic people, you're the only person who's going to be offended, and I apologize for that, but I don't really apologize for that. We should talk. I don't believe this is a moral issue, okay, in terms of right and wrong, like in this grand scheme of things, but I do think it's an important question, because we do have a responsibility as parents to know our children and what is best for them, and what is going to lead to that goal of education. And I want to talk a little bit about that in a moment. What is that goal of education? When we think criteria for how we make that decision, how do we go about that? Now, one thing that I always stress in this class, and I hope you've heard me say this before, I'll say it again, I am not up here pretending that I have the answers, okay? Our oldest is going into third grade, and then we have all down to one, so we've got four kids. We're in process. We're always trying to figure this out. We're always talking to people who are ahead of us. I had lunch with a gentleman this week who's ahead of us by a couple of steps, and it's always good to talk to people who've been there, done that, and learn from them, either the things they did well or the things that they wish they could do over. And so I'm not up here as an expert. I'm not here to say this is how you should do anything. What I am going to do is share some of my thoughts on it that you're free to reject. You don't have to agree with me. And I'm going to tell you where it's sort of led us for this season in our life. Okay, I've always had, in the past, if you'd asked me, I would have said, yes, our children, I really wanted my children to go to public school. And there's reasons for that. But I also had in the back of my mind that we would take it a child at a time, and that we would look at their personality and their situation. And some of that comes from my own experience. My parents, chose three different tracks for educating me at different times. And so there was a time when I was in a private school, there was a time when I was homeschooled, and there was a time when I was at a Christian private school. I personally was never in a public school, which is sort of funny that I decided that that would be such a good idea. Where we have come, as we've educated our children, we've got a third grader, I've got a first grader, we've had them in public school, and we've had one of them in a private school here at Grace Academy. And this year, we've actually chosen to homeschool our kids. And some of you may think that sounds crazy. Some of you might be thinking, yes, that's such a great idea. I have no idea if it's the right thing to do. Not a clue. No idea. It could be a train wreck. We might have them back in school by Christmas. But we've chosen this route based on some of what I want to share with you this morning. Let me give you two kind of like high, you know, bird's eye, but then there's kind of an underlying rationale that has sort of been playing in my mind for a long time. And as I look out, I realize that there's a number of you, maybe you're past these decisions. That's okay. I'm hopeful that it will be helpful for you who are in the process of some of these decisions. But regardless, we're going to talk about family. We're going to talk about what that looks like and why it's important, and that goal of education. So I hope there'll be something in this for everybody. High arching, we made this decision somewhat due to convenience, just to be perfectly honest. We've got four kids, they're getting more and more involved in activities, and my schedule is a little weird. I work weekends, and then I'm off on Mondays. That's my only truly full day off. And because of extracurricular and the fact that I may be traveling more because I'm pastor of our missions as well, we just felt like this would be something that would give our family more flexibility. So that was just a very high end, although it ties into what I'm going to get to later. The other thing is that I believe that faith involves risk. And I believe this very, very deeply. I believe that when God calls us to follow him, there's an inherent risk in that. And that when given the option to choose between the status quo and risk, and I don't mean reckless, I don't mean uninformed, I don't mean just throwing cares to the wind or whatever, but when given the option of choosing to take a risk or maintaining the status quo, I would like the DNA of our family, if you will, to default to risk. Because I believe that is what leads us to deeper faith and trust in God. And so if you look, if I was to share kind of our pattern in our family, sometimes we got that wrong, but there have been a number of places where we've taken steps that it was just because I thought we just need to take a risk. Things have gotten too comfortable. And so for us, we looked at our school, and it's a great school. I have no complaints about the school. I think their teachers are wonderful. The school is wonderful. We moved to that area in large part because of that school, but I felt that we knew what the status quo would be, and maybe there were some opportunities with regard to our family that homeschooling would give us. So that played a factor as well. And again, I just want to stress that this is our decision for our time in this season, and I'm not in any way suggesting that that's the right solution or the right answer for anybody else. I'm the superintendent. This is the teacher right here. This is my wife, Carrie. somebody asked me, so as the superintendent, when is school starting? I said, after Labor Day. That's let it be done. So anyway, but I want to share kind of some of my thought process that ties into those ideas and how I see our family. One of the ideas that I think is crucial to family and what you'll hear, this is our philosophy, but it's also our theological conviction here at Grace Bible Church, is that for me personally, so I'm going to start with the dads and the husbands. We are the head of the household. We're the head of the family. We come from this from Ephesians 5, but also the whole pattern of Scripture and how God creates men and women to complement. And it is equality, but with different roles. Okay, this is a huge thing I've just opened up. If you want to talk about that later, that's great, but I don't have time to unpack it fully right now. So, but then together, we lead our family. So there's a responsibility that I carry that is unique as husband, as father, but then Carrie and I together lead our family. And I'm running point on that in a sense, but we do it together. What that doesn't mean is that I make unilateral decisions. I'm smarter than that. I'm wiser than to try to do that. But these are things that we enter into together. But I do have a unique responsibility. But what does that mean, okay? What does it mean that I lead my family? What does it mean that we lead our family? We're not pioneers. We're not crossing Louisiana Purchase, and we're leading our family to this unknown place. So what does that mean? Where are we leading our family? You can at this point you can jump in. Yeah, so this is a... Yeah. Yeah, intentionality. Okay. Are we going somewhere? Kind of. Okay. Where are we going?
Bless you. Better relationship with Christ.
Yeah, better relationship. So what we want is to lead our family to, you know, love and follow Jesus. Okay, that's fairly simple. Okay, so how do I do that? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, how do I do that? So we pray. There's a number of things that we might say that we do at this point, correct? Like, well, we're going to talk through decisions. We're going to pray with our kids. We're going to take risk. I mentioned that, you know, just a moment ago. Yeah.
One way is to model.
Yeah, there's modeling involved, okay? So all of this, what? Ask it this way, what does this entail within the family? I'll tell you, everything. Okay, it's everything. So as our family, if I want more family, let's think of this as a unit, to love and to follow Jesus, what that means is that I would like our family in the decisions that we make, in the way that we spend our time and how we do life. everything to be centered on Jesus, on the gospel. Everything should reflect that. It should inform how we, you know, where we decide to send our kids to school. But it should also inform how we spend our time. It should inform how we spend our money. It should inform how we discipline our kids. We talk a lot about that in this class, what that means and what that doesn't mean in a way that reflects Christ. So all of this should lead us to this place of being centered around Christ. This is, if I can put it this way, this is our culture. Okay? So if I want to get a little more specific, here's how I see my role and our role really together. And that is this. To lead our family is to create and protect our family culture of loving and following Jesus. Okay? So it's this idea, I want to use this phrase, and I'm stealing this from Andy Crouch. It's a great book that talks about this sort of at a very abstract level, but then brings it down to the family. That is culture making. That we are culture makers within our family. How do you do life? That's what culture is in one sense. How do you do life? Within our family, I want to create a culture. Okay, use your imaginations here. I want to create a culture of loving and following Jesus. And then I want to protect that culture from pollution, from dilution, from anything that might mess it up. Okay. So culture, I believe, I've thought a lot about this over the last several years, and I really think this is at least a good way, but it's I think an accurate way of describing what does it mean to lead our family. Well, the way I lead my family is by creating this culture so that it becomes the very air my kids breathe. But also Carrie and I, right? We're part of that culture as well. So when I mentioned earlier that part of the DNA of our family is to be risk takers, well, that's part of this culture of following Jesus. I believe that that's what he calls us to do in faith. Okay? So what does that have to do with education? That's a good question. Let's get there. Okay, let's talk about education. So what is the goal of education? Don't give me, if you give me the what I'm going to argue is the right answer, let's not start there. Let's start with what most people in the world, if you were to ask people, just high level, what's the goal of education?
Get them out of the house.
Get them out.
Better workforce.
Okay, good. If you were to ask a professor, what's their goal? What are they doing? Transfer of knowledge. Yes, I think that's incredibly accurate.
From a professor.
Exactly. I think that there's a lot of different answers that you might get. But I believe that our philosophical approach to education is mostly modeled around that idea. The dissemination of information, the transfer of knowledge. Here are facts, here are information. And now why do we do that? Why is that what we're about? There's a lot of reasons here. I'm going to get a little philosophical for a little while, and I'm going to bring it back down. Just bear with me. Well, that's true. Yeah, it's easy to... Everybody learned these facts. Job is done. It's difficult to measure other things. Okay. Well, one, we need information to operate in the world, correct? So if I want to have a particular career, I need certain information in order to make me knowledgeable in order to be able to do that. Okay, so that's certainly part of it.
At the core, you don't want to keep creating the same mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to eat poison berries
over
and over.
Right, and, yes.
You know what I mean? So there's an education.
Absolutely, that's a great point, yeah. It will better our society as a whole. I love this. Yeah, John, I'm going to come back
to that.
It's true, right? So we're educated. It makes us better thinkers, at least in theory. It helps us analyze, be discerning, and so on. It's interesting. Some of that is cultural, though. If you talk to people in other countries, some societies, I was speaking to someone from India not too long ago, and she was explaining that their educational system is based on a slightly different approach, where it is not to, one of our goals with education is to create or to help people discern between good options and bad options. There's analysis that goes on, which is what you're getting at. And in the Indian, what she was describing to me, their philosophy of education, they're actually, that doesn't exist. The way that they teach is simply, this is what you understand. And when she came here to do graduate work and was told to review two different articles and compare, she was like, I have no idea how to do that. So that's just an interesting sidebar. I want to go back to what Rob said. So it has to do, say it again.
We thought educating the masses would better our society. It would reach utopia through education.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Why do we think that? What do we believe about people that would make us think that? True. That's true. That's true. Good point. Table that. What do we believe about the essence of what it means to be human that we would think if we educate people, that'll solve everything?
If you educate them, they will make the right decisions and they will know the right path.
Right input equals right output. And the input is specifically how? Your brain, it's knowledge, it's how you think. Where do we get that? This guy named Plato, right? So you go way back, and we're gonna trace this real quickly. So you go all the way back to Plato. He has this idea that becomes incredibly influential, that what we are in our essence is thinking things. We are, and I want you to picture this when you look at everyone today, brains on a stick, right? Just little brains, and you've got, you know, there's a body going on there too, but your brains, that's it, okay? You follow that through. We've talked about Gnosticism some. And then we get to the Enlightenment, and there's a number of people who buy into this and are very influential, but there's one that stands out. Who said this? I think, therefore, I am. Yeah, Descartes. So Descartes, what does Descartes do? What is he? What happens? He has a crisis. He has a crisis that he doesn't believe, he doesn't know if he can trust everything around him. And so he goes off, and who's seen The Matrix? That's Descartes. It's called Cartesian skepticism, this idea that I could be just a mind in a vat and I wouldn't know. You might, right now, be a mind in a vat somewhere, and this is all just happening in your mind. Red pill, blue pill, okay? So what Descartes, he decides is, okay, I can know nothing except even if I'm being deceived, at least I know I'm thinking. So therefore, I am. There's actually philosophical problems with that connection. But we won't get into any of that. All right. So this becomes our model for education. If we can input the right ideas specifically through the mind, then we will get the right output. What's wrong with that? Besides the fact that we're not intrinsically good, which is a good, great point. But what's wrong with that model?
We're whole beings.
We're whole beings.
We have bodies and souls, and all of that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Yep.
Taught into, you know.
Yeah.
So you gotta learn viscerally and kinesthetically and all that.
Yeah.
Each computer is not programmed identically.
Yeah. Yep.
Different outputs.
Are you saying we're computers, James?
That's the model, right? Is that we're essentially thinking things, we're computers that were programmed, and so you give the information that comes out. Yeah.
Kind of along that, I guess the will is not hardwired to the brain.
Yeah. How many, go ahead, John, and then.
The problem is you have sin in the world.
Yeah.
And what is not seen is the problem, is because people base all of their thinking processes through makeup of their upbringing,
so yeah,
the surroundings, how you process anything that happens to
right
you. And because our world is inherently sinful, unless if you have a basis to base your morality off of, there is no such thing as morality for except for what you grew up and what you were
yeah
was morality.
Okay, so
and even when you have that common basis, you know, for us, it would be Jesus Christ. We're all different people.
Like, yeah.
We aren't meant to be computers.
We don't all, there's not a perfect equation for everything, correct? So even if you took, and I completely agree with everything you said, even if you took that, the sinful part out of the equation, just humor me, you would still have this problem, as you said, of experience, of biases that may or may not be like true in a moral sense, you know, of like, well, this is good and true. But simply by the fact that your experiences are different than my experiences and so on, how many people can take information and interpret it differently, right? Data has to be interpreted. So this idea of if I simply give the right information to everybody, everybody will come up with the same solution and therefore we will all get along and live happily ever after is flawed from the very beginning. Because we are more than just thinking things. We are more than just brains on a stick. Okay, so if we're not brains on a stick, what are we? If we're not just thinking things, if the essence of our humanity is not just to think, what is it?
To love.
To love. God, you're always like jumping ahead. Yeah. It's to love. But what kind of love? When we say love, what do we mean by that? Do we mean like it's to love like I love Carrie, like spousal friendship?
Doing something that selfish motivation doesn't justify.
Okay. All right. I think yes. Kind of. Yeah, it's all that plays into it. I think so. Let's use love in an ultimate sense. Our essence is to love, but it's a reflective love that is drawn out of the ultimate love that I'll use this word, worship. I think that's who we actually are in our essence, is worshipers. Genesis 1, we were created to worship God, to reflect Him, to be image bearers. The chief end of man is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. It's worship. So this goes back to Thomas Aquinas gives us a good picture of this. He says that we are all created to be worshipers, and so we're all longing for something. This idea of worship, it has to do with longing, with desire, with love, but in an ultimate sense. I can love someone unconditionally, but I can also love them in a worshipful sense. Do you know what I mean? It's like that person can become the object of your worship beyond just loving them. We are called to love, agape love is reflected to us, but we can turn someone into an idol, essentially. We can turn anything into an idol. But the worshiping gene, if you will, is not itself sinful. In the sense of the fact that it exists, we are created to worship. The sin comes in, as Aquinas would say, in that we're looking in all the wrong places. Our hearts are sinful, and so our worship gets perverted. It needs to be recalibrated. I run off in this direction to have that longing filled, that worship desire filled, and I need to be running towards Christ, okay? So we're worshipers. So Genesis 1, it's interesting. If you look at, how much time do we have? If you look at Romans 12, interesting thing. I might be wrong on this. I won't preach this in there, but I'll share this with you guys. I've never heard anybody else say this, but this is what I think. Romans 12, 1 and 2. So start with verse 2. Says, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Now, if I take that verse out of context, what is that? How might I interpret that? What's that? Fix my mind, fix the problem. It sounds almost like if I just have the right information, if I just think differently, then that's how all this is happened. Then I won't be conformed to the world. But let's look at verse 1. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. And then he says, do not be conformed any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. If I put those two together, here's how I read this. Present your bodies as living sacrifices. This is your spiritual act of worship. And now I'm explaining it a little bit. Do not be conformed, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind through worship. They go together. As I worship, this is renewing my mind. It's as I worship that it transforms me, that I'm changed. Now, is information included in that? Of course, we worship in spirit and truth. I have to know who I'm worshiping. I'm worshiping Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God. So truth is included, knowledge is included, information is included, but they're part of this grander, more robust idea of worship. Okay. Everybody with me so far? Anybody totally dying? It's okay. We'll survive. Next week we got somebody else teaching, so see it'll be fine. You'll be great. All right, so we said all this. All right, so we're almost there. What is culture, or excuse me, what is worship entail? If I'm worshiping something, what would that look like? Yeah, you have to know it. Okay, so don't think right now you're thinking about worshiping God. That's true. But let's just think worship generally. Yeah, you have to know about it. You need some information. Although I don't need as much as you think. Can I worship the Cowboys without knowing everything about their history? I mean, I might not know that much about football. Honestly, I don't. I just need the logo. I need to kind of get caught up in the frenzy. You know, I need to live in Dallas for a few years and I'll just kind of catch the bug. So in that sense, worship actually precedes knowledge, or it can. So, but what does worship end up doing to my life? I truly worship something. Yeah.
It absorbs your time.
Yeah, it absorbs your time. Does it affect anything else in your life?
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so worship ends up, if I'm really worshiping something, it can consume me, correct? And I might have multiple gods, but we're just going to use one God for the moment just to make the point. It affects what? My decisions, how I spend my time, how I spend my money. Where have we heard this before? What were we talking about to begin with? Oh yeah, culture. Culture and worship are very, 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 very closely related. Your culture reflects what you worship. Think about that. If you want to look at what we worship in Dallas, look at the culture. If you want to know what you worship in your family, look at your culture. Those things are linked. Your culture reveals and it reflects what you worship. So what does this have to do with education? See, I told you, we're making it back. You guys are on a journey today. You had no idea when you showed up. What does it have to do with education? So going back to the very beginning, let's put it this way. My family, my job is to create and protect that culture that is one of worship. What if education isn't just about ideas? What if education isn't just about information? What if education, from a theological, biblical perspective, instead of a Platonic perspective, is about much more than that? If I view education philosophically, practically, through the lens of Descartes and the Enlightenment, then it's about information. So I send my child to school, or I homeschool them, or I send them to Christian school, it doesn't matter, for the goal of information. You're gaining information. You're learning how to think. But I believe that education is more about formation than information. I believe that education is part of what I'm trying to do, what we're trying to do within our family, of not getting our kids to think the right things, but to become the right kind of people. You see the difference? And those two things are not the same. When was the last time you met an uneducated dictator? They all have the best educations in the world. They've been to Harvard and Oxford and every else place you can think of. They are not stupid. Find a tyrant. You will find a very smart person. See, it's not enough just to think the right things. What we want is for our children to become the right kind of people. And so the goal of education has to go beyond information. That is not sufficient. It has to become formational. And so that happens, understand, then that happens everywhere. Because we live and breathe in culture. not just in your family, but that's your family, and then there's your church culture, there's your school culture, there's just Dallas culture, there's the United States culture, there's all these different. So what I want, as I think about educating my children, but more than that, as I think about forming this culture, wherein they will be transformed, they can be formed, I have to think about how I'm going to, as best I can, create a sphere that will at times counteract, that will help them to think critically, that will help them to at times stand against, that will at times help them to see how they can embrace, right? But that culture that I'm creating, I have a season where that's the most important and significant formational work I can do in their lives. Okay, now, let me raise a couple of potential, any questions about that? Yeah, Tom.
George Orwell said.
Oh yeah, that guy, yeah.
He said he went to a very premier British school. He spent years studying Greek and Latin. He didn't remember any of it.
Yes.
He came out a snob.
Yeah.
So there's the formative versus the information.
That is so good. That is so good. Yeah.
And at Covenant, we talk about it being very formative. It's very much what you're mm-hmm. talking about. But Brett uses the language, reshape their loves. They come to yeah. us not knowing, and we bring them together with the best minds of everything yeah. and love it, and we give them a place to learn to love
yeah.
learning and the best things and shape,
right.
give shape to those loves.
And that's what this formation is. Thank you for bringing that back, because this is tying it up. What I'm doing is I want to create a culture that shapes what they worship. That's what we're getting at. I want to create a culture, a family culture that is centered around loving and following Jesus. In other words, that worships him, that becomes their ultimate love. And everything else, it all plays a part. Information, knowledge, and education, and the secular sense of the word, all of that is part of it. But what do they love? What are they falling in love with? What becomes the chief desire of their heart? Andy?
We also homeschooled. We homeschooled for several years.
Yeah.
And although this was not necessarily our intent when we started, mm-hmm. we quickly realized that the discipling of our children mm-hmm. Was really what we wanted. Learning about British and American history and science and all of that information is great. We have fun with it. I have one child that loves art and one child that is just a huge Greek mythology passion right now. All those things are great, but like none of that matters if our children don't understand how to be kind to each other and love each other mm-hmm. and reflect who their Savior is.
Yeah.
So the discipling to us is mm-hmm. really that formative foundation that we can't do later.
Yeah.
Like we have to do this now.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to get this in college.
Yeah.
They're not going to get this in high school.
So let me say something real quick. Actually, I don't even want to say it quickly. I really want you to hear this. This is not my attempt to convince anyone to homeschool. I said at the beginning, let me say it again. I'm looking at this front row right here. I got public school, private school, and homeschool. And I know these families, and they all love Jesus, and their kids love Jesus.
We're mixed breed, right?
You're a mixed breed. Yeah, you guys are. Yeah, I didn't even know. That was my family. My family was all over the place. Like, it was just, my parents went, you need this, you need this, you need this. And so, yeah, Grant.
Well, what I was thinking about is when you're talking about education, I don't think it's not just classroom education.
Right. Right. Yep. Yeah.
Education of a child is your entire life.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. And you never cease to be a parent,
right.
correct?
So there's not a line yeah. between classroom and this, because so much of this that we're talking about in formation can occur outside classroom.
Yeah. And I think that's what we want to be aware of. And so when you think of, a few questions that I want to kind of address is, one is, if you're sitting there going, okay, my kids go to public. So the reality is, look, not everybody either can or should homeschool. Certainly not everybody can afford private school. And some people don't have the options, okay? So if you're sitting there going, okay, my kids go to public school, are they doomed? No. Don't hear anything that we said. What it means is, and this is what, I love families that I know whose kids go to public school. What I've seen modeled so well is that there's an awareness and an intentionality of what that home culture of showing them what it is to worship Jesus, that their home life is still the most influential, the most significant influence in their lives, and they use that, they leverage that, they filter everything that their kids are getting in public school through that, the good and the bad. And there's an advantage here, can I tell you? Where kids, what I've seen as a former youth pastor, is that kids who are in public school but their parents have done that well and they've created that culture, they see a distinction. They know better than a lot of other kids, this is the world and this is us, and we're distinct and we're different, and that's attractive and it's powerful. So there's a real strength to that, okay? Can it be harder in some ways? Sure, there's challenges no matter what. Because the other challenge is that you could be sitting there going, my kids go to a private Christian school, they're perfect, right? They're safe, we're good.
Yeah, well, I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, I don't need to worry about it.
Right.
They got that. And let me tell you, depending on your private school, I went to a private Christian high school, and I'll tell you, yeah, we were told a lot of the right information, and the culture was horrible. Okay, there was nothing about that culture that was pointing us really to worship Jesus. It was pointing us to worship success and being really smart and knowing a lot of stuff, but not worshiping. And by the way, you know, I've talked to school administrators, private Christian school administrators. They'll all tell you, of course, that their school is different. Of course you are. Just be aware, okay? And the same thing with homeschooling. We can fall into this, and this is where people get really dogmatic. I've pushed back against some of these people. This is the way to do it. This is the only way to do it. And our kids are going to be great again. It's the same issue. What is your family? If your kids are wholly in your family for their education, well, you still have to answer the question, what is your culture? Is your culture one of worship of the Lord, or has your culture in some way been polluted? And your kids, they're absorbing it. That's the thing. You can say one thing, and your kids are absorbing the actual culture of your family. So if you say, we, because we're believers, we believe in serving people, and you never go and serve, well, they're absorbing that, okay? It's not like, oh, mom and dad, plug that in, outright output. Again, they're not brains on a stick. So how are you, what are the rhythms of your family? What are the patterns of your family? How are you creating this culture of worship? And you start with yourself, right? And this is where I have to start. And then Carrie and I have to have this conversation as a couple, and then this goes to our family. But is my heart worshiping? Is that where I'm starting each day? Is that where I'm coming at my life? And believe me, it doesn't matter that you're a pastor. Okay, so any notion of that is just like anything else. You can be part of a church and have a very wrong culture, either personally or even within a church. So it takes some thought. And I think more than anything, though, it just takes doing. So less reflection. There's a place for reflection, but then let's just do it. Let's worship. What does it look like to worship? We need to be praying. We need to be spending time in God's Word. We need to be going and serving people. We need to be serving within the body. We need to be loving people. Just do. And that is how you create culture. It's not through thinking it into existence. All right. That was my, there's my thoughts. This is where we've been. This is the journey we've been on. There are some conversations that were this deep. Some conversations were just, how in the world are we going to pull off, you know, Monday through Friday and all the rest? And again, I don't believe that there's a right answer in one sense. Do I know this is the right answer for us? Not even close. Not a clue. Maybe. But I believe in taking the risk.